This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Friday edition of the program. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. We got good stuff coming up today, man. We got Seth Wickersham, who will join us. He's a longtime investigative reporter for ESPN. He's written a book about the New England Patriots, having been around them for a couple of decades. So we remember the excerpt that was making its way around the internets, the interwebs, Dave.
The one that we begged Clayton not to quote.
Yeah, just because you don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. But you know, the Robert Kraft talking about his bleep hole coach and blah, blah, blah. So there's some interesting things coming out of this book that came out this week. So we'll talk to Seth Wickersham at 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for that conversation. The Professor, 4 o'clock. And then Pete Carroll preview of this weekend is our exclusive conversation between the coach and Steve Vrabel. We'll play that for you at 5 o'clock, in which they'll talk about the health of this team, which doesn't appear to be great going into this game, Dave. And
hey, really quick, though, Seth Wickersham, I mean, as far as the Patriots, would you say that people in Seattle are probably most interested in the Patriots, like of any, almost any other team? Like that, you know, when people go, oh, what are you talking about the Patriots for? And, you know, we're doing this interview with Seth Wickersham, but I think because of the UMad bro, you know, the hatred for Tom Brady, and losing to them in the Super Bowl, and Belichick and everything. I just think it's kind of interesting, and I know as a Seahawk fan, and I'm not like Clayton, I'll just say I'm a Seahawk fan. You know, you just, it's become a kind of a rival, like a fascinating rival that, you know, that you have over the years played a few times. And remember, they went out on Sunday night a couple years ago and whooped them.
Yeah, and they're responsible for the most painful, costly loss in the history of this organization. They're on the other side of that. And they went into that game with the reputation of being, you know, dealing from the bottom of the deck, so to speak. They are cheaters.
Dealing from the bottom of the deck.
That's
like
exactly
that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, you've got Brady, who, I mean, he's kind of Mr. Perfect. And then you've got Belichick, who's a great villain.
Oh, yes.
You know, so.
Yeah, he plays that role to a T. And he doesn't shy away from it, so you give him credit for that. And Brady has become infinitely more likable since he's left there.
Yeah.
He just seems like he's opened up, he's having fun, he pokes fun at himself. It just it's hard to dislike him now. I mean, I'm not rooting for him, but I don't look at him and go, ugh, he just seems so whiny. He was so whiny with the Patriots. And not that he doesn't whine now on occasion, but there was just his persona there was so different. Being attached to Belichick, being attached to the evil empire.
Yeah.
He just seems looser, you know. We're watching him drunk off a boat, smiling like a big dope. He's like a bobblehead out there being held up by his backup quarterback. And
didn't he also throw the trophy?
Yeah, he just seems more likable now.
Yeah.
Belichick, no, he's the same guy.
Right.
Yeah, just as unlikable as he was before.
Yeah, I think my two favorite moments with Brady before, we're not talking about Tom Brady the whole show, but
just the first 2 hours, just so buckle up.
Yeah. No, but I mean, him, you mentioned it being drunk. Also, him talking to Lavonte David afterwards, and David's been down in Tampa Bay there for forever, and bringing them a Super Bowl, and how he's looking at Lavonte David, and they're talking about how great it is, and he's like, Lavonte David's the only guy in the world right now. You could see that from Tom Brady. I mean, there's a lot to like about him, but I know that people in Seattle hate him, but you're right. Bill Belichick, easily hateable.
Oh, yeah. He makes it very easy. He makes it very, very easy. So we'll talk to Seth Wickersham at 3 o'clock and just kind of go through some of the things that he was able to find out as a guy that covers a team for as long as he did or around it for as long as he was. You know, any new revelations? You feel like, you know, we hear a lot of things. We hear a lot of things that are not out in public and not on record. And, you know, so you in this business, you tend to have a lot of knowledge you can't share. You can't tell people, and I'm wondering if he's, you know, in writing that book, if there were things he was like, nah, I heard that, but I couldn't make that public, or if he was like, whoa, I never heard that before. Did he really say that, or did that really happen? So that's always interesting. Meanwhile, the Seahawks have a very big game this weekend that, Dave, I don't feel great about. I don't feel great about it, and hopefully for those that believe in the reverse mojo, believe in that sort of thing, that sort of voodoo, if you will, that I don't love the game. I don't love it. I'm And you brought up anytime we think things are going to go the wrong way, they tend to reverse course. They tend to just kind of go opposite of how you feel they're going to. And I'm hoping that's the case this weekend, because it looks like not only are you with a backup quarterback, Chris Carson is out again. He could find his way onto the IR. That's not great news at all. Nothing against Alex Collins, but now you've got a backup running back starting. You'll have a backup quarterback starting, and your defense is in a shambles, and you're on the road against a team that might be feeling pretty good about things, coming off a win over a 3-1 Bronco team at the time, and their other win against the Buffalo Bills. So,
and the Bills are 4-1.
Yeah, and everybody said, well, they're a 2-win team, big deal. I'm like, yeah, so are the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
Seahawks are a 2-win team. We talk about them like they're 4-1 or something. No.
And they have their quarterback.
Yeah, they've got their quarterback. Yeah, maybe he's being held together by duct tape. Who knows? But it's just, I'm not saying the Steelers are world beaters, but I don't know that we could look at them as less than. You know, and I'm wondering, you know, I was looking at this last night as I was writing the notes. Where do the Seahawks have the advantage over the Steelers in your mind? If we're going just position groups, or you want to go individual positions, I mean, I would say wide receivers, the Seahawks do, but DK Metcalf is dealing with a foot issue. We're not sure if that's going to be something that impacts this weekend or not. But, you know, just in terms of raw talent, yeah, I like the Seahawks receivers better. And I'm going off what the experts are saying about their O-line out there in Pittsburgh, because I haven't watched the Steelers play this year. So everybody's telling me their line is terrible. John Clayton says it every week. They're atrocious. They're terrible. Okay, so I'll give the advantage of O-lines to the Seahawks just based on what everybody else is saying about the Steelers O-line. Outside of that, where do the Seahawks have an advantage? Safeties, maybe?
I don't think so. I mean, I'll put Quandre Diggs up against anyone, but, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick is a really good player. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. If you just go defensive backs in general, I think they probably take the cake there, too. They got Joe Hayden, you know, and Joe Hayden's having an okay year, but, I mean, he's a guy that's proven. I've seen this Cameron Sutton kid, number 20, make plays all over the place. And then Terrell Edmonds. He's a first-round draft choice back in 2018, playing well. Minkah Fitzpatrick, no, I don't think so. And I would give right now, I mean, this isn't maybe 10 years or 10 weeks from now, I wouldn't be saying this, but Devin Bush and Joe Schobert, and then if you throw T.J. Watt in there, he's listed as an outside linebacker, they're better than our linebackers, and they got a better D-line.
Yeah, and you guys can text in. 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. 253 says, you guys are pumping the Steelers up so much. We have a way better roster, even with Wilson and Carson out. They do?
Yeah.
I'm objective here. I'm not pumping the Steelers up by any. They're a 2-3 team. But they're at home. They're coming off a very good win, and they appear to be healthier than the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks are a 2-3 team, with a backup quarterback going on the road, a backup running back going on the road, and a defense that's the worst in the NFL. So tell me about how we're pumping up this. I'm not pumping up the Steelers or anything. I'm trying to make an objective comparison between the two teams here.
How about tight ends?
I wouldn't. Do the Seahawks have tight ends?
Yeah, they do.
Are they on the roster?
And you and I keep hoping every week. And look, they've been targeted together 18 times. And they have 16 catches between them. Sorry, it's 19 and 16. So, and, you know, you mentioned this right before we went on the air with Geno Smith throwing the ball to Disley a couple of times.
Yeah, that was good to see.
And I don't want to jump ahead, but, you know, we have a cut from Gerald Everett, who maybe he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, you know, because he felt like he was ready to go last week, I guess. So, and they haven't targeted him nearly as much. And look at him. I mean, he's got 9 targets, 8 catches. Remember, he had another catch for a 20-yard gain.
Got called back. You want to hear what he had to say?
I want to know if he's
actually
angry.
I was ready to play. You know, I was in tune with the game plan, and, you know, the coaches did a great job of getting me back up to speed, of keeping me up to speed. And it just came down to if I was cleared or not. So, you know, being a new thing with, you know, the vaccine and the pandemic, obviously a lot of stuff that we were still figuring out ourselves, but I think they made a rule saying that players couldn't get cleared game day, and some guys are telling me that's because of me, but yeah, I was ready to roll. Wanted to definitely play the Rams, but definitely wanted to be out there with the guys.
So he was ready to go. Obviously protocol got in the way of everything, and you know, he's just a guy. He, you know, we went through and said, all right, yeah, the top 2 targets will be obviously DK and Lockett. That makes perfect sense. They're a brilliant combo. who's going to be the third most targeted receiver on this team? And they don't have to have the title of wide receiver. We both picked a tight end. We just picked different ones. You picked Disley. I said Everett. And my rationale was, hey, Waldron knows him. He knows, you know, and Everett knows this offense. He knows what Waldron likes. There's going to be a comfort there, a familiarity, which might give him the leg up. They'll use him more because he's just more certain of what's happening out there.
Right.
And Disley's proven to be a great receiver. He's got great hands. It seems like anytime you throw him the ball, he's going to catch it. Problem with both of them is they just don't throw him the ball. And and that was the case last year. I did not understand if that was scheme or was it just, hey, they weren't open or we needed them in the block because the line had some problem. I don't know what happened to the tight ends last year, but you thought it would be rectified this year with a new head coach or a new coordinator, I should say, and a guy that was familiar with Everett and really incorporated Higbee and Everett. The tight ends were a big part of what the Rams did, so it just seemed like it stood to reason. Okay, it'll be a different set of circumstances now, and so far, no, it hasn't.
And Waldron coached tight ends for the Rams early on,
yeah,
you know, before he became the passing coordinator. So, but you know, I'll say this: there's been five games played. Freddie Swain only has five more targets than Disley. So, I mean, there's still a chance for that to happen, and pretty easily, actually, because, you know, and for Everett, I mean, he's missed a couple of games, but, you know, if you just get another couple extra, you know, targets per game, he can get right up there, right up to speed, 10 for Disley and 15 for Freddie Swain. So, yeah, I'm thinking that might come back in vogue. Also, you know, I thought maybe it would be Chris Carson, but now all of a sudden Carson. Do you go back to – I've said that – because if you look at the numbers on Chris Carson, the worst thing that he did was miss the end, and it's not his fault he got hurt. At the end of 2019, the Arizona game and the San Francisco game, and I'm trying to remember what their record was, but they lost those last two games right then and could have won the NFC West, actually, if they'd beaten the 49ers. He missed those two games, and then he missed the two playoff games, and that's when they had to go to Marshawn and all that, you know, bringing in Turbo.
Right.
So I feel like people sort of over-exaggerate how much he's hurt, but here he is again.
This doesn't help.
Yeah.
And this gives them ammunition to go, see, Dave, I told you. Yeah, this is not a good way.
Well, and especially since they're in a tight spot right now. I mean, they need a running game, and they need a dynamic runner. And that's who Chris Carson is. Is Alex Collins that guy? But
you like the 1-2 punch of Carson and Collins.
Yeah.
I like that. But we haven't seen it, and there isn't really a 2 here. You got a 1 in Collins, you know, for the time being. But the 2 is it Homer? Is it DJ Dallas? I don't know. And obviously, what is Penny still not practicing? He's still hurt. He's on the IR. I mean,
So
in a year where he really had to prove something, this is when you desperately need him. Could you think of the timing being worse for him in terms of just not being available? This was his opportunity. We talked about it. How is he going to establish himself as a running back in this league and find another job on a roster? How is he going to get some tape out there at best? Well, he's not going to get a ton of opportunity, but, you know, if Carson goes down, there's his window. Well, Carson's down, and he's down as well.
And 2-3 and going on the road with backup quarterback. So, yeah, you look at right down the middle there, the quarterback, the running back, and and these numbers you put down here, the only saving grace that you can look at, and maybe this is something that you can lean your hat on, as Jake Heaps would say, the jack of all aces.
When everybody's on their edge.
Jake Heaps, the jack of all aces.
For all intensive purposes, I was told today.
I think he's doing it on purpose.
I don't think that was based on the reaction I saw on his face.
All right. Leave Jake alone now. But we're +2 in turnover ratio, 11th. And again, you go through the numbers and look at, it's almost exact opposite if you look at top five turnover ratio teams and bottom five. Like, it's, you're headed for 11-6, 12-5. And if you're on the bottom, you're headed for, you know, 5-12 or 6-11. So they have that advantage. They got the +2 takeaway turnover ratio. And you look at the Steelers, they're -2.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, you talk about the defense, and is there any way I think that they could suddenly start doing what they did last year?
Everybody's just in the right place.
Everybody's in the right spot, everything. They finally had a meeting. It's still frustrating to me, though, that you went through that last year, and it took you 8 weeks. You're going through it this year. I mean, do we get it right in week six? You know, that's the thing. But the other thing I want to bring up about takeaways, the Rams had a, I think it was an 8-play, 70-yard drive that was going to be a touchdown. And we didn't even talk about it or think about it because at the end of the drive, Quandre Diggs got a pick in the end zone.
Yeah.
It just magically erases.
It's a beautiful elixir, Dave. We all felt better. That defense, right? You nailed it because the defense forced a turnover there. So you felt like, hey, defense did their job. Well, they were getting their butt handed to them until that moment. It wasn't like they went out 3 and out, knocked them off the field. They gained 3 yards and forced a punt. No, they were driving it right down your throat, and then Quandre Diggs came up with the play.
But you'll take it, right?
You'll take it, but I mean, you're right. It does wash away everything that led up to that moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what turnovers can do for you. And I've compared it to the 2019 defense. You know, they 32 takeaways. You know, and the sacks also are a huge deal. But, I mean, look, that's all got to be on coverage. But that's what the takeaways do for you, and at least they have an advantage, you know. Here's one thing we haven't talked too much about that I'm worried about is they blocked a punt. Actually, I almost got two against the Bills. The Steelers did. I watched that game, and you know they blocked a punt for a touchdown. The Seahawks have had problems blocking. You know, as far we saw Dixon have to pull it down,
come up with a one-handed scoop.
Yeah, in Indianapolis, and then you know he gets it blocked and has to block it. You know, kick it again. So. That's something that I'm sure they're looking at it and going, okay, we better tighten this stuff up. But, you know, it's like I was saying yesterday, it's been kind of hit or miss or, you know, really good or really bad on special teams. They've had some really good things. And then, you know, you get a punt block, man. It's a huge deal.
You know, talking about the defense and all of a sudden everybody's in the right spot. There will be something about it. Obviously, as a Seahawks fan, I will absolutely embrace them playing a great game. If they win and the defense plays great, I'm going to celebrate it. I'll be happy. I'll have a sigh of relief. But there will be a small part of me that will be annoyed by that. Because it will tell me, oh, I guess it was that easy just to do your job. And you just chose to wait until now. You waited till you're below 500 to decide, oh, I guess I better stay in my gap. I guess I should take on blocks or I shouldn't jump the short stuff or whatever the problems have been. If it is that easy, there will be that element. The majority of me will be celebrating and feeling relief. But I will be irritated on some level that, okay, it was that easy, and you guys just couldn't figure out how to do it until now. You couldn't just decide, oh, I'm gonna do what I'm supposed to do on this play, and the next play, and the next play. I'm just going to worry about my job and do what I am asked to do.
I don't think you'll be alone in that frustration. Oh. Yeah, I mean, and you know, I was talking about they did it in week 8, I guess, last year, and now we can get it done in week 6, you think? I mean, we'll see.
Have they given you a reason to believe they're going to turn it around this week? That's for people that are like, oh, you're so negative. I'm like, no, we're being objective. We're looking at what has this team given you to judge. They've given you 5 games. You tell me what they've done, especially in the past 3 weeks, that have really given you a reason to go into this game and feel like, oh, they got this. Don't worry. Backup quarterback, don't worry about it. Backup running back, don't worry about it. I know it's on the road. None of that matters. They've got it. Tell me what it is. What am I missing?
Well, here's what I would say. Why it would happen this week. My dad always says, it's got to get worse before it gets better, so it might as well hurry up and get worse. I think we saw that on last Thursday night.
Was that the equivalent of hitting rock bottom the last game?
They hurried up and it got worse.
Are we done with worse? Are we now on the rebound? Are we bouncing back up, hopefully?
Maybe that was it. The thing that was that's frustrating to me, though, is the Minnesota game should have been that game. That should have been the game where you get the coverage. And I know a lot of people are going to blame Trey Flowers, and I just don't think that – I mean, look, Trey struggled. There's no question about that. And I'm not defending him or anything. It's just that there were so many other things that were going on that could have been fixed. And, you know, so to me, I thought it should have been after week 3. But, you know, I guess it just didn't seem that bad, you know. I don't know why, but that one was frustrating to me. Then they came back, and you saw a little bit of that happening in the 49er game, but they got it right eventually, and you saw, like, people, Bobby knocking down passes, making tackles on the underneath guys, all that looked good, and then we went back to Minnesota on Thursday night against the Rams.
Brutal, brutal. You guys can text in again, 421-3776, that's 421-ESPN, you guys fill in the blank. Seahawks win if, and spare us the if they score more points or anything. Serious question. If you've got a legitimate answer, Seahawks win if. Fill in that blank. I'm curious to see what I think I said in the notes last night, if they can force some turnovers.
Yeah.
Because outside of that, right. I just don't know where they dominate this team. I don't know where they're dominant. I don't think they're really dominant anywhere, the Seahawks. And I think they're facing sort of a mirror image of themselves in a team that's not great, but they found a way to win a couple of good games, and they're at home, and they've got their starting quarterback. So they've got an advantage. So the Seahawks win if. You guys fill in the blank right now. Let's take two.
Little update to take two because Pete Carroll had some injury news. We'll hear the explanation for why Chris Carson is out coming up at 2:45. But he also said about 10 minutes ago that Russell Wilson will go on IR. That officially means the earliest he can return is week 10. So as we're kind of speculating about, it's after the bye week and after these next three games against the Steelers, Saints, and Jags.
So between the bye week and the Packers.
Yes.
At Packers.
Yeah. I thought there was a chance he'd go left-handed out there. Did you see the video of him yesterday?
No.
He was out there on the field, and he was playing catch, but he was catching the ball. He had the helmet on, full thing, like he was there for practice, and whoever was throwing him the ball would throw it to him kind of soft. He'd catch it with his left hand, and then he was throwing it left-handed. Didn't look great. Didn't look like, hey, this guy should be playing left-handed, but just interesting to see him out there in uniform, throwing the ball around, just like he's part of the practice.
You know, you have switch hitters in baseball. It's very wise to be a switch hitter. Wait, do you think we'll have that with quarterbacks?
One day there'll be an ambidextrous quarterback out there that, my right arm's a little sore. I'm going lefty.
Yeah.
This next series.
How about that?
They do have switch pitchers. There's a guy that was a switch pitcher.
That's right.
There was one on the Mariners there for a bit.
Yeah. What's his name? I remember that.
I don't know. We'll look it up. But, yeah, I mean, it's not common, but you've seen it in baseball. Why not in football?
Well, I just want to hear that Russ has the injured finger, like, tucked away where a ball can't hit it or stub it, you know, stub his finger and set him back or something. I'm all for him being out there. I get that he's fired up and you can't, like, you know, it's like these savant children that are, they're pianists and, like, you have to drag them off the piano.
Yeah.
You don't force a kid to go and practice and they become this. It's like they have it in them. And I think they need to drag Russ off the field right now and just, you know, let's take it easy for a little while there.
Well, Zach Ertz scores a touchdown for the Eagles last night, gets traded to the Cardinals this morning. And because everyone's going to ask, no, he cannot play this week. He will play week 7, so he cannot double up on your fantasy points. But he is on the Cardinals now. Arizona sends a 2022 fifth round pick and cornerback Tay Gowan to the Eagles for Zach Ertz.
All right. Well, Cardinals just stacking up.
Yeah,
stacking up talent and weapons there. I don't think Ertz is who he's been, but I think he's still a weapon. And I was kind of in and out of that game. I was watching the Kraken game, and then I was flipping to the baseball game. So I was going with the trifecta, flipping back and forth.
Yeah, nice.
But I did see one of the most egregious taunting penalties ever. The most just mindless, dumb call. Dumb call by the official.
On the sideline?
Yes.
Yeah, it was so
there was
stupid.
Not a word spoken as they showed the replay. Not a word. Guy just stood there. Yeah, okay, you should turn around. You don't need to pose or anything. But, you know, Leonard Fournette looking like, what's this guy doing? And all of a sudden, they're like, 15 yards. I'm like, you got to be kidding. He didn't shove him. He didn't rub his head into the ground. None of that. Didn't give him the business, Dave. It was.
Is that a 15-yard penalty?
It was give him the business.
Yeah. For that penalty, the taunting?
Yeah,
is
that was 15.
Yeah.
That was 15 for that.
Right.
It was as bad as it gets.
It was a bad night for officiating, just in general.
Yes, it was.
Umpiring. But, yeah, you know, I heard Ertz, like, saying that he was crying at his locker last night or something, and his teammates were coming up to him. Did he know right after the game?
I don't know. I
thought I'd heard an interview. Anyway, yeah, I felt the same way. Like, oh, great, Arizona got – I mean, probably past his prime – so is J.J. Watt, and they have him. So
and he's helping.
He's a pretty good player.
He's helping their situation.
Yeah.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. The historic series of firsts continued for the Kraken last night. We'll hear them all coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. As I said, I was bouncing back and forth. I know you were working last night, Dave, but I was bouncing between the Giants-Dodgers game, the Eagles-Bucks game and then the Kraken-Nashville game. And by the way, I have to say, and I said this before the game, as they were out there on the ice, those have got to be some of the worst uniforms in the NHL. Are they not, Lefko? They look like jars of mustard skating around out there.
If you don't like yellow, you're not going to like them.
Those are awful. It's not even a good shade of yellow. It's just kind of this.
What's their? Are they the Predators?
Predators, yeah.
And then they have like a saber-toothed lion?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then they have mustard yellow. What color are those pants?
Same.
Were they brown?
They were the same as the jersey.
No, they were like dark blue or brown. We were trying to figure it out in here. Remember? Mm. Yeah, look it up, Lefko.
Yeah, they were unappealing to say the very least.
Yeah,
but the what was appealing is, hey, a lot of firsts last night, Dave. The Kraken get their first win, and they engage in their very first fight.
Jared McCann, activity in back of the play, then stunned in a battle with Yakov Trenin. Trenin has a size advantage here, but high marks to Vince Dunn for dropping the mitts and taking on this guy.
Yeah, he did. He got in there. I marvel at these guys fighting on skates.
Oh, my God.
I just trying to get any sort of traction or leverage into a punch. It's amazing what they do on skates, period, much less,
right,
you know, holding a guy, punching with the other hand. If we're being honest, it looked like Dunn got the worst of it. Don't ever turn your head. Never take your eyes off your opponent, Dave. You can't react to anything that's coming. Don't ever do that.
We're going to have a segment every week, Bob, breaking down the hockey fights.
Yeah,
I love it.
Just, you got to be able to respond to what's coming at you. If you turn your head, how do you know what's coming at you? That's the one that hits you that hurts the most. That's going to knock you out. Anyway, but I, in all seriousness, I'm just messing around. But it was kind of cool to see that happen. Nothing happened in the first game. I didn't even see any sort of dust up where it looked like guys were, you know, puffing up on each other or anything in the first game. And this one, yeah, got a little chippy. I like that.
You know, I have to say I'm surprised watching. I think I'm going to really love watching the defensemen when they get down, when they're on defense, and just all the activity that's going on around the net and in front of it, and how those guys are able to not only, you know, protect, and, you know, they always go up and just kind of shove the guy, and it's just a constant battle up there. I was watching, is it Jeremy Lauzon? And then is it Soucy? Carson Soucy? I don't know if that's how you – we'll figure it out as we go along. The dude, Soucy, he's 6'5", 215 pounds on skates. He's probably about 6'8". And Adam Larson, too, one of their better players. And just watching the work that they do, it's kind of like the grunt work. You know, it's like watching D-line or offensive line. Yeah.
The rebounders.
But plus, you know, they're also, you know, have to stay out of the way of Grubauer, who had a bunch of really good saves last night. So, yeah, that part of it is really fascinating to me. And when you watch what's going on down there, like you said, first of all, you know, they're using leverage and trying to get the guy out of the way on skates.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and then the other thing is I'm surprised after having watched how physical it is there that there aren't more fights.
Yeah, yeah. You see them just kind of – somebody gets smashed into the boards and they get up like, eh. I mean, wouldn't your natural reaction be like, you
– Yeah.
You know, who
you
did
think
that?
You can get away with that?
Yeah, but they just get up, go. That's the game. Then they come up with their first empty net goal.
A handoff for Appleton. Empty net. Just wide off a stick. McCann in front. Bullseye! It's Brandon Tanev with his second of the game. And Seattle has a two-goal lead.
And that turned into a huge goal, by the way, because they gave up one there in the final minute. That, you know, obviously, if not for that goal, you're looking at a tied 3-3. So, yeah, that was a huge goal. And it's just interesting to hear all the firsts. Their first fight.
Yeah.
Their first empty netter. Their first power play goal. Their first this, that, the other. And there's going to be a season of that, obviously, in an inaugural season. But after the game, Dave Haxtell talking about he liked their aggression, especially from the man who threw the mitts down, threw the gloves down, Vince Dunn.
You know, Dunner gets in a, you know, a great scrap, you know, a big hit, great scrap. You know, that ends up turning the game for us. You know, our power play did a great job in that sense. We earned that power play. The power play's there. The PP did a very good job pushing us in the right direction. And I just thought, you know, in the second period, I thought we did a better job. I thought we won the line change game during the second period, especially in the second half of that period. We were able to hold the puck, get good line changes, and I thought we had a little bit better energy, and that led to time of possession.
Dunner got it done. The PP was good too, Dave.
I had to pull that clip. I had to use that clip just for that.
The
for
PP,
Dunner.
We got it. Two power play goals, right?
Did they get two?
I think
they got one,
just
for
one.
Sure.
I think there was two.
Okay.
Was there two? Okay. Well, but Dunner was in there.
Scared about Dunner.
Yeah, Dunner was in there. Yeah.
Is that the hockey thing? Now it's always an E sound in baseball.
Yeah,
you know, Sieg, Z, blah blah blah. It's an E. Is that what they do?
There's
in hockey?
Well, it's the Y. Yeah, like Tanny and all that.
But in hockey, is it Er?
No, it depends. It's Y or Er. I think.
Okay.
So I think there's another Haxtell clip we have in sweeping that they throw all the Y's in there.
Oh, okay, okay, I got you.
There was a slap shot from almost mid ice by I think it was one of their defensemen, the Predators, that scored. And you look at it in slow motion and see the stick bend and just the precision. And like I said yesterday, I'm going to really appreciate – and you gotta go with the slow-mo. I mean, look, I always complain about a lot of the penalties that they call in the NFL. They make it super slow motion and everything. And that bothers me because everything happens fast on there. But like John Paul Morosi was saying yesterday, man, this is a fast, physical game. And it's just like an explosion of energy, but when you see the slow motion replay and
yeah.
the bend of the stick and how much velocity that creates,
I think plus it helps because for me anyway, and as a novice in watching this sport, it's still hard for me to follow the puck at times, especially when you know when something's going on like you were talking about where all the action's around the goal and you see everybody, you know, poking at it, everybody's trying to get the puck, but I can't really see where it's at. You got the defenseman in front of the goalie, and I'm sitting there going, how does the goalie know where the puck is? I mean, you can see where everybody's activity is, but...
Plus, he's got that big mask on.
He's got the mask on. He's got guys in front of him. He's got everybody swiping at this puck, and I'm like, how do you keep track of where that thing is?
Yeah.
I can't even see... I can see where everybody's... where the scrum is, but I can't see the puck.
Yeah.
So it was... It's been fun so far. I know it's only two games. I know it's only two games, but it's been really enjoyable to watch this game, watch this team. And somebody was asking, did you see the fight in the stands? Yeah, I saw it this morning.
What?
Yeah, I saw the video.
First fight in the stands.
Yeah, first fight in the stands amongst opposing fan bases. And Lefko showed me the video of it. I know it's probably alcohol related. I've never understood getting into a physical confrontation with some stranger because they like the other team. I mean, when you think about it, when you talk it through, isn't that just the dumbest thing ever? I love this team. Well, I love this team. We're going.
Let's go at it.
You know what I mean?
And they both paid money to be there.
Yeah, you paid money. I assume they both got kicked out. Somebody probably got hurt on some level. Somebody's got a black eye or busted a tooth. It is the most mindless thing I've ever seen. I in any sport, the stands, I don't get it.
I'm sure the arena got their money's worth out of both of them because they probably each had about 10 or 12 beers. And those beers are what? $15-$20
probably. They're looking at them at those two going, dang, we got to kick out two of our best customers now. That's terrible. But
yeah,
I did see the video for those of you texting in about that
first fan fight. Yeah.
First fan fight. That's right.
The Predators. That is like a dark navy blue.
Is it
what it is? That's what their pants were, and then there were the mustard.
Yeah, the
mustard
yellow
jersey.
Is bleh. Yeah, it's awful. Good. All right, coming up. Will Chris Carson's absence determine the outcome of Sunday's game? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Seth Wickersham, who's written a book about the New England Patriots dynasty and getting deep into what was going on behind the scenes and how the owner feels about Belichick and how Brady feels about Belichick and Belichick doesn't give a bleep about anybody else, all that good stuff. We'll get into it with him. Coming up at 3 o'clock, as far as this offense goes, we were talking about the Seahawks offense heading into Pittsburgh, and you're obviously going without Russell Wilson. We now know Chris Carson won't be available in this game, so you're looking at Alex Collins. And here's what Pete Carroll said about Carson and how they're handling the situation.
Well, he made a really good jump over the weekend and felt way better. But coming out of that and starting to go back to work with it, there's not enough progress made. And so it's better for us to get him back and make sure that we don't rush it back. And so we're going to just take this time, and it is a delicate thing. You know, he's got something going on in his neck, so we got to make sure that we do it really well. And so we're going to take care of him. And this just seems like the right decision. The jump that he made was in his relief, and he felt way better and all of that, but not ready to play yet.
Well, the good news is you've got Rashad Penny. Oh, you don't. And somebody sent in a text, and again, you guys can text in 421-3776, 421-ESPN. saying, and I can't find it, but I'll paraphrase, something along the lines of, hey, this makes me worry a little bit. Is it similar to Cam Chancellor? Mm. And I'm like, I don't think so, because those were injuries that were sustained and they never came back from that. Same with Cliff Averill.
Yeah.
And we heard Pete say when this was first brought up, this is something he's been dealing with that they've sort of managed over time, which makes me feel like, okay, is this a nerve thing? I don't think if it's anything even in the same hemisphere as Cliff and Cam, they give him that extension.
Yeah,
I don't think they do that. I think if this is, hey.
Oh, you mean going back to last year and everything, when he says lingering?
Yeah, he made it sound like this is not a new thing. It's something that's kind of been there.
I think he means like this season, probably.
You don't think this is something that dates back prior to the season?
Well, and the severity of those, you know, remember with Cliff and I think Max Strong also when he retired, it was like, if you hit the wrong way, like, you could be paralyzed.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Yeah. I mean, and those are the kinds of things that, like, you're like, okay, there's no question, right? So, Carson, I have to say, though, I was just thinking through when we were listening to him. I don't think I ever had a neck problem. Can you believe that? I mean, knees,
no, especially
shoulders.
When you hear Schlereth talking about shortening guys' necks out there and doing all that.
That's a very
vulnerable spot on the body.
It's my weapon of choice was my head. And, you know, my neck, I just never had neck problems. I remember one time during the season, I don't remember if it was Stanford or here, but I was pulling my jersey on and I'm like, my neck went, you know how you catch it?
Yeah.
You ever like you're drying off with a towel and
you wrench
your neck or whatever, but that was it. Never had that. But for him, I mean, it's a huge deal. And there's no way there's a way, obviously it's possible, but I just don't think it's anywhere near the severity of what we're talking about with those guys.
Yeah.
It's not some, you know, life-altering thing. It's just
like it's more of a discomfort thing, and maybe it's a nerve situation that flares up and they have to calm it down. I don't know.
I'm always curious about that relationship with the coach and, you know, who's pushing to play, and is there some animosity, and it's like, hey, I want to play. I'm fine. I'm okay. And they're like, no, the trainer said this and that. And, you know, I wonder, I mean, I'm sure some players are like, hey, I want to get back out there no matter what. Can you shoot it up or whatever? And then there are the guys that are like, okay, yeah, I'll just go by whatever the trainers say.
Yeah, Rashad Penny. You know, the other thing I would say about that is, I think as a coach, you probably appreciate those players that are angry about not being, hey, let me out there. I'm ready to go. I'm fine. Just, you know, rub some dirt on it. I'm good. I'm sure as a coach, you love that, but you also have to protect them from them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, hey, listen, I want to win as much as you do, kid, but you want a career, don't you? You know, we don't, it goes beyond this game this weekend. You know, I know you're mad. I know you don't agree, but we're going to do what's best for you and the organization moving forward. We need you. So it's not worth this one game to lose you for the next 10.
Yeah. And in the back of your mind, I mean, as a coach, you love those players.
Yeah, exactly. Versus the guy who's like, okay, I'm fine. I'll sit over here. You guys just let me know when you're ready for me to come back into the field of play.
I love that accent. That's my favorite. But yeah, I look, it's obvious what you're getting out of Russell. I mean, like I was saying, he's insane.
He's out there throwing left-handed. He's got his uniform on. The whole thing, he's ready to practice.
But I'm just joking about him being crazy. But, I mean, I love that about him. You got to love that. Because, look, you know, you could get to a point where you're making so much money that you might just kind of shut it down and go, yeah, I'll just see if I can get away with, you know, just playing sort of, you know, take a few plays off here and there. I mean, this is a guy that the money is so well spent. I guess I would say, you know, yes, it's a big burden when you have, you know, whatever percentage. I don't know if it was like 18 or 20. I remember Moyer had a number at one point, which I saw Moyer last night. He came in here for Hawks Live and he was all fired up. Guy can't get enough radio, apparently. He did a half hour with us, did 2 hours last night. But anyway, what was my point?
I think you also said your head was your Moyer. Best weapon in football and you never had any issues.
That. Oh, I also remember Paul Moyer snoring on the.
What was my point after you just got done saying, my head was my best weapon, never got hurt.
Yeah. I remember everything perfectly clearly, except for what I just said like 30 seconds ago. But, you know, yeah, but that is weird that.
You were talking about Russ and just how he wants to play, and some guys can shut it down when they've made a whole bunch of money. But obviously that's not Russ, and that's something you appreciate about any player who's.
Oh, yeah.
Who's obviously, they don't need financially to be there. Like, if the career ended, they're going to be fine, but they're still mad that they're not on the field. Right. Why aren't you putting me in?
Yeah, Moyer had a percentage on how much of his salary was for the salary cap.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. And then I got on the Moyer tangent, but yeah. I mean, like I said, it's money so well spent on a guy like that that's not only a leader vocally and not only so into what he's doing, but he's just he's a great example for the rest of the guys, and you just have to peel that guy off the field. So that's going to be interesting to see going into that Green Bay game. If he can't, you know, throw it right or something, I mean, is he going to be in denial? I mean, I wonder how are they going to test him? How are they going to say? I mean, you can't ask Russ, how do you feel? Do you think he can go?
Just watch him in practice.
Answer's going to be yes.
Yeah, he'll always say, "I'm fine. I'm ready to go." But yeah they're going to. That's a guy you got to protect from himself.
Right.
All right, coming up, a man who wrote a fascinating new book about the Patriots and the NFL, Seth Wickersham, will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.